Call the data practices subcommittee to order. And the first item on the agenda would be the approval of the minutes. Could I have Representative Lesh, would you like to move the minutes from approve the minutes from February 20th?
I'll move them as long as you're okay with the fact that I didn't read them. Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Lesh moves the minutes from February 20th. All those in favor of the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. The first item on our agenda, folks, is House File 2044, and Representative Holberg is pitch hitting for Representative Peterson, who is not feeling well at all. And what the plan is with all these bills today is to recommend their approval onto the Civil Law Committee, which is meeting right after this. So, I'm sorry. We're going to hear them on Wednesday. I thought we were going to be hearing them just a little bit.
Nope.
All right. Representative Holberg, do you need someone to move House File 24? I guess you can do that.
Madam Chair, I'd move House File 2044 for consideration of the subcommittee. And it was my understanding that there was a member of the public that was prepared to testify on behalf of Representative Peterson's bill. I'm not sure if that individual is in the room. Considering I'm just filling in. Okay, if he would, I don't know if the committee has his name. Bill would turn and make the licensing information public from the DNR. There's kind of a sordid past on this issue. It used to all be public. And I can't tell you the years. I can just tell you who was the commissioner at the time. So when Charlie Weaver was commissioner of public safety, there were federal regulations related to driver's license data, and they were using DVS to help sell and track their driver's license. And so at that point, they made it non-public information. And then 2 or 4 years ago, there was a bill. Actually, the department, DNR, was putting in place a new system for selling their licenses, and they came to the legislature, and they wanted just for us to make a decision. What were you, you know, what? How are we going to treat this? We're going to put this new system in place. And I had legislation that would make the majority of it public. In the dark of night, in an environment omnibus conference committee, the current law language was put into an environment bill, and we're going to have two of those instances tonight, this and Representative Anzlet's bill, where we have Chapter 13 legislation being put in bills in conference committees, such as taxes and environment. And here we sit trying to fix these kinds of things, and certainly we're not going to fix that issue moving forward. But here we sit tonight with two things that we're trying to really have a good discussion on. What should the policy be around this data and the Data Practices Committee, where I believe it belongs? So with that, I certainly would like to turn the time over to the gentleman here, and we can go from there.
Hello, sir. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Yes, my name is John Kynard. I'm a constituent of Brandon's and also an employee of Northern Reporting Service. We're a private investigative company that's licensed as private detectives by the state of Minnesota. We've been in operation for over 25 years, so we've done this for a long time. We only investigate matters that are claim-related. We work for insurance companies, law firms, and governmental agencies, including the state of Minnesota. So when we became aware a few years ago that this information was no longer available to us, we kind of went into a panic. We use this as one of the tools in our fight to combat fraud in the insurance industry. When a person is interviewed and they're suffering from a disability, or they're trying to get back to work, or if we're doing an asset investigation, this information is critical for us. We learn whether or not they can hunt, whether they can fish, whether they can ride an ATV, whether they can ride in a boat. And it's just one of the tools that we use, but there's just no other way that we can get this information other than using the DNR information. We're good stewards with the information. We don't release the information to anybody other than our customer, and they do the same. So I would urge you to repeal this and allow us to put this back in our tool of investigative tools. If you have any questions on how we use the information, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Committee members, are there any questions for the testifier? I know we've heard from a lot of small businesses that this information is important to them as well, too. So, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, thank you. Sir, so that is my question. How do you use it? And does it include Social Security numbers?
It does license? Not. No, we don't. When we're given a case by whoever we're getting the case from, we're always provided with that information. We're given Social Security numbers. We're given dates of birth. We're given current addresses. We're given all types of private information that we're bound to keep private. When we get information from the State of Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, we just get an idea of do they have a fishing license? Do they have a hunting license? Do they hunt pheasant? Do they trap? Do they own ATVs? Do they own boats? Where do they purchase their license? That's the information that we get. And we have a form that we had sent over to the DNR, and on it they ask for the name, date of birth, and whatever other information to help them identify the person, the target of our investigation. And oftentimes when we're investigating somebody, we might have a John Anderson Sr. living with a John Anderson Jr. So if we don't provide a date of birth, we might get the wrong John Anderson. So that's why we try to discern between the parties of who we're requesting the information on.
All right, thank you. Representative Lesh, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you. Yes, I do, Madam Chair. So you need hunting and fishing information because if someone submits a claim for a disability or something, for a disability where there's no way they could get out and hunt and fish, I don't know how that would be the case.
Yeah, but usually by the time we get the claim, it's been vetted fairly well. The claim handler, they generally handle hundreds of claims, and only a small percentage, one or two, will raise the red flags in which to refer it to a supervisor, who then refers it to a claim manager, who they may even have to refer it one more time to a VP or a vice or a president of claims. By the time we get it, there's enough red flags raised that we go out and we try to investigate. And normally, well, in the claim process, a claimant might be deposed, they might take a recorded statement, they might just be interviewed. But one of the questions that are always asked are, what are your hobbies? What are your outside activities? And if somebody says, well, boy, I haven't fished for the last 5 years, and we find that they purchased fishing licenses over the past 5 years, that's not definitive to say that they're fishing. But that raises enough of a red flag that further investigation is warranted. Maybe they send us out and we talk to neighbors, or maybe we go out and do surveillance on the fishing opener. It's just one of the tools that we use to try to identify people who aren't staying within their scope of disability or are claiming that they can't return to work under limited restrictions based on the fact they can't sit for more than 10 minutes at a time, but yet they're able to go out fishing and sit in a seat for 4 to 6 hours at a time.
Okay.
And we're not the ones that make the determination on the claim. Just because we come up with this information, it's just one of the little bits of information that we put together and let the insurance company and their counsel determine what they want to do with it.
Further questions for the testifier? Well, thank you for your testimony, sir. I would like the department, the DNR, to come down and just, I know that I'm pretty sure that they're okay with this, but I just want them to be on record as such.
And, Madam Chair, there's
Representative Holberg.
Opportunity. This repeals the whole section. We could have some discussions between now and next week whether we want to exempt juveniles. I think this is a discussion and a starting point here. I think that the legislation 2 years ago went too far the other way. It's causing problems for people and how they operate. You used to be able, if a boat washed up on your shore, you used to be able to contact the DNR and find out who owned it so you could call them and say, hey, your canoe blew in on the storm last night. I'm up at the north end of the lake. Come get it. Those types of things are no longer available to the public. So
Thanks. That's a good suggestion. Representative Lesh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Holberg, who was responsible for slipping this in conference committee, and what were their reasons for it?
Representative Holberg?
At this point, I was not in the room when it occurred, and I suppose in lawyers' talk it would probably be hearsay, and maybe I should refrain from repeating it. But maybe off the record we can have a discussion.
Well, as we're well aware, Madam Chair, hearsay is always admissible in the legislature.
Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. As Representative Holberg has stated, this data has had a storied past. It used to be all public. When we got caught up with a federal change within the driver's license classifications from a federal code classifying that data as private, it became private. We had 14 permissible uses that exists now with that data. Our system linked from you take your driver's license, we would swipe it. We captured the data in the DPS database, populated our data in our licensing system database. Because of that link, we were determined tied to the license numbers. We created a new system in about 2009, as the representative stated, and we asked the legislature to make a determination on whether that data should remain private, should have limited uses of the data, or should be fully open, because we severed that link between the user and the DPS database. We now have our own database we maintain. Anybody who buys a hunting and fishing license has a DNR number now as well, so we don't have that concern. We do have several concerns, though, that whatever decisions are made, the system is made so it's simple, easy for us to administer. We don't want to set our staffs up to fail if it becomes too complicated and burdensome. And we need to talk about what kind of data do we want to be made public. Driver's license data, age, address, things of that nature exist within our database. And we just want to make sure people understand what is available there. And, you know, certainly one way to do it is go all back as public as it was before. We manage that system. We can protect data for security purposes if we have concerns about that. The data was sold as well. Department administration sold lists of all registered firearms hunters, for example, or all registered fishermen, everybody who duck hunted, things like that. So groups, user groups liked those lists. Other people did as well.
Mr. Meyer, as far as the age of the person whose data you kept prior to this being, when it was public before, was there an age limit on that? Or was it just 16-year-olds and up because you said you swiped their driver's license?
Madam Chair, members, the data was all, I don't believe we released the age at that point in time. I can clarify that, but all of the data was there. A person who's 12 years old needs a license to hunt deer, for example, so they would be contained within our database.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Further questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I don't know if there's anybody else.
Yep, I guess I should ask that.
Testify.
Looks like Mr. Neumeister is making his way forward here. Please state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. It's very clear. This should be public information. It's been public for decades beforehand. I think skillful interpretation of what the federal law is with driver's license made it non-public. And then 2 years ago, basically it came down to some hokey politics of why a lot of people thought it was going to become public. And then what happened, it turned out to be private. And so this is a good bill that overturns that. The only thing I point out that as it continues on, historically, with these kinds of lists, we have asked public, I think in a general way, is give me some choice to opt out. So if you're going to be doing this, give me a choice to opt out so I don't get all these mailings or whatever. And that's what a great number of states do.
Okay,
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Lesh.
No.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Neumeister, maybe you'd be willing to divulge the hearsay. Who did it, and what? And to the best of your ability, the objective reasons of why these ghost members thought it should be private.
Mr. Neumeister, would you like to take a crack at that, or would you claim
I have no problem, because it's what some of the stuff sometimes you hear, and what I heard was basically the leadership of the party in power 2 years ago here felt that...
Which would have been which party, Mr. Neumeister?
felt that those names were more apt, Hunters and all that, to be of another party. So therefore, rather than have the political party of that party that was not in power at that time, use that for... And that's an item that was confirmed by more than two people.
So you're saying that was more than hearsay.
I didn't ask the chief author of that bill or whatever, but I'm just telling you that's sort of... Because it seemed like, at least with the major lobbyists who were going in there on the final night of conference, because I was wondering whether or not to stick around or not, that was more than likely going to be public. But something happened. So, Chairman, that's the best that I can share with you. And it was in Dill's bill, dealing with some natural resources.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Representative Lesch, did you have a quick follow-up question?
Thank you. It was just a quick follow-up observation, Madam Chair, that the last time I recall, the Hunting and Fishing Amendment was supposed to turn out a lot of Republican voters in 1998, and there was a little snafu with that. So, just observation, Madam Chair.
All right. Thanks for that comment. Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, at the risk of getting myself in trouble, I think the Republicans took over the House in 1998, so...
Yeah, but Jesse Ventura got away.
Well, go figure that one out.
Representative Holbrook, would you like to renew your motion?
And if I might, given that I'm presenting this for another member, certainly I want to uphold his position, but I think there would be some benefit to have some discussion between now and Wednesday as to exactly what range of data sets we view as being public in a process for an opt-out if we want to go forward with this policy change.
All right. Thank you. All those in favor of passing House File 2044 and recommending that it be go back to the full civil law committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill moves forward. Representative Anzels, you're next. House File 1784. Can't I find it? Representative Anzels, I'll go ahead and move your bill, recommend that it be passed and send on to this full civil law committee. Go ahead and explain your bill to us, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, and a special thank you to the chair for the courtesy here. This legislation, House File 1784, is a repealer of language that was adopted by the Tax Conference Committee in the 08 session. This legislation and the repealer pertains to one state agency, the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, which is an agency in northeastern Minnesota consisting of the seven counties of the Taconite Assistance Area. It's an agency that's been around since 1941, and it's an economic development agency, both public and private, and it is funded exclusively by a production tax on taconite mining companies. Essentially, the reason this legislation is here and the reason why I'm asking for a repeal of the language which was adopted by the conference committee in 08 was done without, to my knowledge, committee hearings, public testimony, public participation. And was frankly unbeknownst to me until it was done, even though I'm a member, sorry to say, of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. This provision has had a chilling effect, in my view, on obtaining credit reports, financial fee statements, balance sheets, and other data that should be available to the public on private companies that are doing business with Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. That board does loans, does grants, sometimes requiring matching funds, sometimes not. But at the end of the day, most of these transactions involve public dollars. And it's one project in particular which I found particularly disdainful, and that is a $9.5 million arrangement with a company called Excelsior Energy. That company was successful in obtaining two loan agreements, debenture agreements from Iron Range Resources, one of $1 million in 01, and another agreement of $8.5 million in 05, and it is now the winner of 12, and this company has not produced one full-time job for anybody other than a lawyer, a lobbyist, or a professional meeting attender of some kind. And so that's why, that's the motivation, and I'll stand for questions.
Committee members, any questions? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. Representative Anslick, if you and I are both fortunate enough to be around next year when House rules are adopted, would you be interested in some type of provision that prohibited Chapter 13 amendments from being inserted in conference committee reports or omnibus bills?
Representative Anslick.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, that's a question that I... I'm pleased to say I would respond in the affirmative and absolutely be interested in helping.
And just so members know, I'm Representative Garofalo will be removing Chapter 13 provisions from the bill being heard in Texas this evening, the K-12 bill. So it, those of us that care about this try and do our due diligence, but some stuff is just impossible to stop without having a rule to the contrary. And I like your bill.
Thank you.
Representative Flesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to state for the record for Representative Anzels that as a member of the legislature, I take personal offense at your use of the term professional meeting attender.
Point well taken.
Any other comments? Anybody in the audience wishing to testify? Mr. Neumeister. You know the racket.
Go Madam ahead. Chair, members of the committee, this is a great bill. 4 years ago, it was put in the dark of night by Senator Bach. And what it did with IRRB on one particular thing, what they're trying to do is make, for one entity, public, but what they did, they made all the grants, all the information that were available to see why they should get the grants, everything non-public. So it's about time that was corrected. And just for the record, when I'm sharing with you what for the last 4 years has not been available to the public, what happens when there's a general provision in Data Practices Act, if you give money to a private entity for a loan, grant, or whatever, this is the information that's becomes public. Basically, you would get information such as financial statements, all kinds of information that would be available to you to be able to find out whether or not that company is deserving of those grants or whatever. What the bill, what the amendment did from 4 years ago is basically you only get the name and the amount granted. So you have no idea whether or not any of these companies with this one public agency whether they were deserving of millions of dollars. And so, as I indicated recently in a post I wrote, this committee is having sunshine and darkness and privacy issues. Here we can go for sunshine.
and I think it's a good bill. I know you've taken a lot of heat. I know you've taken a lot of heat on this, being from that part of the state.
And I suspect a little more heat there.
But I just wanted to, you know, say thank you.
Thank
for
you.
The public. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Any questions for the testifier or anyone else wishing to testify? All right, then I'll renew my motion to move to recommend that House File 1784 be passed and moved on to the Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nay. Same. The bill is moved on to Civil Law. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. We're going to go off of the agenda here just a little bit, and Representative Myra is going to come with House File 2647. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Holberg, would you like to move the bill?
I would love to move House File 2647, be recommended to pass and referred to the full Civil Law Committee. And there's an A2 amendment in the packet. If the author so desires, I'd be happy to move that as well.
Madam Chair, Representative, that would be my...
And I'll move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to discuss.
All those in favor of the A2 amendment? Or do I ask for discussion first? Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Go ahead, Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, members, I brought this bill forward out of a cry of transparency from parents and taxpayers alike. There was a situation in my house district, in Independent School District 191, where the school board had a settlement agreement with an HR director, and the amount of public funds in the settlement was over $250,000. Both taxpayers and parents alike wanted more information. The school board said they were being as transparent as the law would allow, and so this bill tries to make it more transparent. The amendment 2 changes the language in paragraph 6 to just be a little bit more easier read. I don't believe it changes the meaning of it substantially, but Amendment 2 does substantially change the following. Let's see, it would be paragraph E.4, and what it does there is it adds local political subunits that more detailed information would be available on those situations. Madam Chair, I do have a number of testifiers that would like to speak in favor of the bill.
All right, very good. Go ahead and call your first testifier.
Mr. Gimberling.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Gimberling. Go ahead and state your name for the record. And
I will indeed, Madam Chair. My name is Don. My last name is Gimberling, and I'm here for the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. We pronounce it different ways, but basically it's MnCoGI. MnCoGI is an organization of citizens, attorneys, media people, librarians, basically dedicated to the proposition that all government data, as much as possible, ought to be public and easily available to the public. So the other reason I think I'm here is that, some of you know, I spent a lot of years working on this stuff. And a few years ago, an issue came up about payments to public officials, settlement kinds of agreements, that kind of thing. At that time, somebody in the legislature asked me to draft some language that hopefully would make it very clear that that kind of information is public. And that's the language that talks about $10,000 to settle any dispute. And for 20 years, that worked. And so I never thought about the possibility that some government agency would hand a lot of money to an employee to say goodbye to them and take the position that that wasn't because of any dispute. It was because of something they couldn't talk about. So I'm always kind of confounded by how the plain words of the statute get interpreted. So when this started, I contacted Representative Mary and offered my help in working on amendments, hopefully to close the hole. In the same discussion, I did raise with her, however, an anomaly in the current handling of personnel data. Again, in another situation previously, again, another 15, 20 years ago, the legislature decided that when management people in state agencies are investigated for alleged wrongdoing, that no matter what the outcome of that investigation, for example, if they resign before the investigation is complete, that the detailed information in the investigation ought to be public. Okay. If they're exonerated, that's what the information will say, and the public will know that there was an investigation and that there was some kind of result. At the time that was done by the legislature, some of us raised the issue of, you're only doing this for state employees. Why wouldn't you extend it to all government employees at the management level? Unfortunately, that argument didn't prevail. But I think the current situation illustrates the problem. In this independent school district, it appears that what happened had something to do with more than just the one person who left and got the money. It also had something to do with other people in the district at the management level. And so actually, data practices requests have been made seeking that information. They've been denied on the basis that the investigation did not determine any wrongdoing. So you're kind of left, both the people in Burnsville and other places, not knowing what really happened. And so one of the things I suggested to Representative Meyer was that there really shouldn't be this differentiation between managers at the local level and managers at the state level, and that's what's in the A2 amendment, the last three lines. It essentially says we're going to treat all management people the same. So this is a really good bill. I think with one little thing, with the exception of one little thing, it closes these strange holes that people find. However, based on all my years of doing this, I'm always amazed at the creativity of government lawyers. It's just quite amazing. So one thing to think about, if you look on line 110 of the amendment, basically it says if you terminate an employment relationship and you get a lump sum payment and you get that payment in lieu of salary or other compensation, that's part of what triggers the arrangement becoming public. What you might want to think about is add the following word in the appropriate place in line 110, and that's the word consideration. Okay. Even though we're not sure what happened in Burnsville, it appears what may have happened was she didn't make the deal necessarily for the bucks. Well, I got that backwards. The school district didn't make the deal for the bucks. They made the deal for her releasing them of any claims. So I could see somebody making an argument that this wasn't about money, it was about a release of claims. So that's just a thought. It maybe closes one more emerging hole. So,
thank you. Representative Holbrook, I believe, has a question.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Yamberling Wood, you accomplish the same thing if you just ended at the end of line 1.9. So, in other words, you didn't modify, for any reason.
Mr. Gamberling?
Probably. Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, sorry about that.
Representative Holbrook.
Well, I guess I'm just looking at this.
Mr. Gamberling.
Here's the game. We don't pay it in a lump sum. We pay it out over time. Okay? For some of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years working with this stuff, and a good share of that time I spent listening to government lawyers calling me and saying, we're going to make the following argument. Craig Mr. Stone is grinning because he knows some of those realities. So part of my expertise is in the ways people interpret your plain words in very strange ways. So that might be a problem.
Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, and if I might, Representative Myra, I don't know if you're prepared to comment on Mr. Gemberling's idea of additional language, the word consideration, if that's something that you think is a good idea, if you want to wait and think about it and maybe address it on Wednesday or...
Madam Chair, Representative, we talked earlier, and I would agree with his comments. I think it's a good suggestion.
Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, if Mr. Gemberling would state his amendment again, I would move such.
All right, Mr. Gemberling.
In there too,
though.
Madam Chair, may I offer three
yes.
more words as well if
yes.
we're going to be making
Represent
an oral
Myra.
Amendment?
Mm-hmm.
On line 1.10, it's been suggested that we insert, let's see, insert all of the, let's see, after include, let's see, if we go on the bill, line 2.5, following the word include, add the three words all of the. So it would read, must include all of the specific reasons, not just a few or selected. So I would ask that an oral amendment be made to add those three words, all of the, after include, and remove or from the amendment 3, line 1.10, after salary, and insert a comma. After compensation, insert another comma, and then add or consideration.
All right. Mr. Gearing, would you want to read that back to us?
Madam Chair, I'll start with the amendment in the bill. Page 2, line 5, after the word include, insert all of the. So the phrase would read, must include all of the specific reasons for the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And Madam Chair, I guess I'm... on the A2 amendment, I'm not sure that I followed the text.
Representative Myra, would you want to go back through that again, please? On line 1.10 on the amendment?
If you
okay. It would be line 1.10. And after salary, add a comma, remove the or. After compensation, add or consideration.
Go ahead, Mr. Gearing.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Myra, can I just clarify the intent then? I think with that phrasing, you would be saying includes yes. a lump sum payment made in lieu of salary, other compensation, or consideration.
Yes.
So, in lieu of other consideration, or?
No. Yeah. No, he's better.
Representative Simon, did you have a comment on this? Or
I did.
Idea for
I
wording?
Think we're all trying to do the same thing here. We all really, mm-hmm. I think, like the idea here. Let me just throw something in, trying not to confuse but to simplify. What would be wrong with just putting a period on line 1.9 after the word relationship? Do we really care that it's a lump sum payment made in lieu of salary or other compensation? Or is it just if $10,000 of public money is involved, you know, resulting from terminating an employment relationship, you know, that might just stop it at the word relationship. My other suggestion, because of what Mr. Gemberling was saying, is, you know, you might not want to say resulting from terminating an employment relationship, maybe in connection with or associated with or something like that, because someone's going to cleverly argue that the payment was not the result of termination. It was part of a deal to terminate, but it wasn't the natural result flowing from a termination. So just some ideas there, so it's to simplify it, but it's whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Mr. Gimberling or Representative Meyer, you want to hash that out for a second?
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Simons, he's on the right track to keep thinking about how people do this stuff.
All right.
And I'm not exactly sure where the language about in lieu of came from. I know it was a suggestion somebody made to improve the bill. It does get into potential issues. So
Representative Myra, are you going along with the Representative Simons' suggestions,
Madam
then?
Madam Chair, I would.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
Thank you for offering it.
So why don't you state then what we would be doing, one of you. Representative Simon, is your suggestion? Why don't you go ahead?
Actually, just one question for you, Madam Chair. Is there anyone here to testify against this bill?
Please raise your hand if you're here to testify against the bill.
Against the bill. Okay.
Okay.
Then in that case, I guess the amendment that I would offer would be on line 1.9, delete the words resulting from, add the words associated with, and then put a period on line 1.9 after relationship, delete the rest of the words in line 1.9, and delete, I suppose, 1.10. I'm sorry, I'm going to the amendment here. Mm-hmm. This would be an amendment to the amendment.
We'll wait a second while Mr. Gehring is checking out the amendment. It looks like Ms. Meyer-Kopinski might have a comment on this. We'll let her come to the testifiers table. You could just, okay. I was going to say you could pull up another chair. Welcome to the committee, and go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Lori Barkopensky with the Department of Administration. And one of the things my office does is explain your legislative intent to people who call. And it would be really helpful on line 1.14 if you could give us a little bit more information on what you mean about in a management capacity. The language that applies to state agencies is very specific and doesn't include everyone in management in state government, and it's really isolated positions. And there's not a good definition of management anywhere, so to the extent that you could provide any guidance on what positions you mean or if it's anyone who supervises anyone in at the local level, that would be really helpful.
Okay. Representative Myra, that may be a tall order for tonight. It might be something that you could work on between now and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kopinski. Meyer Kopinski. Okay, how are we doing, Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, I think I have the proposed amendment.
Go ahead.
So on the A2 amendment, you delete on page 1, line 9, resulting from, and insert associated with. And then after the term relationship, insert a period and delete the rest of that line. And then 1.10, delete all of the new language. So that clause 2, starting on 1.8, would read, an agreement involving the payment of more than $10,000 of public money associated with terminating an employment relationship.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, I think if you then go back to line 2.5 in the bill, mm-hmm. we have half a line of words that don't make a complete sentence. I think the remnant language of must include specific reasons for the arrangement are still sitting in the bill because I don't think we deleted those in the A2 amendment.
Mr. Gehring, are you in agreement with that?
Madam Chair, I think so. I'll need to read
it.
Yeah.
All of change.
And so, Madam Chair, I think what we did is the A2 amendment kept in place the concept, the specific reasons for the agreement. And so you have that remnant of language sitting there now. If we end on the A2 amendment with a period after the word relationship, we have a remnant of must include specific reasons for the arrangement. as a remnant of words that don't hook up to any sentence.
So, Representative Holberg, what you were saying then is you would delete from the semicolon on 2.5 through the end of 2.6?
Madam Chair, I'm so far gone as far as where we're at with this. This may be one where we just, we've been pretty clear with what we're trying to do, and maybe have the bill author and Mr. Gearing work between now and Wednesday to figure out, you know, we adopted the A2 amendment. Maybe we leave it at that. They can look at the committee engrossment and redo another amendment so that structurally it makes sense. Because I think we do want to keep the concept of the specific reasons for the agreement in addition to the money amount.
We still need this part right here.
I don't think we want to lose that part of that. And I don't know how to fix it at this point.
And then you put all that in.
Representative Lesh, do you have a question?
I did, Madam Chair. First, as Representative Simon was speaking, I hearkened back mentally to Mr. Gimling's use of the phrase clever government lawyers, and which is handy to have him around, but I started wondering, do you think, Representative Myra, that this bill and its associated amendment that we're playing around with will increase or decrease litigation?
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative, I really don't have a comment on that. I am trying to respond to the outcry of parents and taxpayers wanting more clarity of how it will increase or decrease litigation. I think that's a whole other issue, but what this is trying to do is have more transparency for the people footing the bill.
Representative Lesh.
Thanks, Representative Myra. I understand what you're trying to do. It's the job of the committee to raise potential implications of attempts, and it would certainly come up. It's going to civil law. This is a subdivision of the civil law committee, subcommittee rather. But anytime these things come up, if in fact Mr. Gimbley is right based on his speculation that the money paid to your school district administrator was hush money, that would be in consideration of avoiding litigation, I anticipate. So I wonder if, in fact, this changes, then is there no other real... Well, it removes an option for individuals to avoid litigation, and I'm just wondering if you'd considered that at all. It sounds like your answer is that you haven't, or that the outcry, as you stated, from your constituents so far trumps that it's not worth considering.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Representative
Meyer. Madam Chair, the website of the school district said that they would like to be more transparent, but that they were being as transparent as much as the law would allow. So the law was in the way. It wasn't that they were hiding behind the law, but that they would like to be more transparent. So the effort here is to make it more transparent so more can be... more light can be shown on this issue.
Members, what I'd like to do is let's go ahead and pass the amendment as amended, and we'll get the bill in shape, and then we'll... What's that? Did we amend the... We passed the amended amendment? Mr. Gearing, where are we?
Madam Chair, I believe the committee has adopted the A2 amendment, and then the item on the table was the oral amendment that we've been working on.
All right. Okay, what we're going to do, members, is we're going to put this down for just a few minutes. Representative Myra and company are going to work on this, and we're going to take the next bill up, and then we'll come back to this.
All right.
How's that?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Next up, Representative Holberg, 2668.
Madam Chair, House File 2668, I'd like to move for consideration before the subcommittee. And this comes from the Legislative Audit Report on Fiscal Notes. It was a recommendation about a concern that when members are just coming up with ideas, not really sure if they're great ideas or horrible ideas, and they want to get a preliminary fiscal note. All of that is public, and some might find out that an idea they thought was really good in practice is not so good and may not want that to ever see the light of day, if you will. And so this would allow for members who want to make a request for a preliminary fiscal note, get some basic information from the agencies to be able to request that information not be made public if and until they actually would move forward with a bill introduction to that effect. I do have an A1 amendment that Minnesota Management and Budget has asked to insert for clarity. I support that amendment, and if there's any questions on the amendment, I suppose we could take those now.
Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Here it is. Representative Simon.
Thank you. Just as I'm reading this, let's see here. So, this is just on the fly here. So, it has to be requested by the, by a directive from the requester that the data be classified under this paragraph.
That's
so
correct.
So we're sort of assuming that legislators would be aware of this, aware enough of this law to make an official request that it receive this treatment. Otherwise, the default is as if the bill hadn't been passed, right?
And that's true. And Madam Chair and Representative Steinman, while members request fiscal notes, generally they have to go either through, well, I think technically they have to go through Ways and Means or Bill Marks, but we interpret that rather liberally in that we allow fiscal, nonpartisan fiscal staff as well as committee administrator from Ways and Means to make those requests directly into the system as well. So I'm guessing we only have to inform and train a very limited number of individuals about this opportunity and the need to make the request up front. In other words, not all 201 legislators would have to have a deep understanding of the nuances of this in order to make it available to members.
Follow-up, Representative Simon? Okay. Mr. Neumeister would like to testify, and then I believe that Representative Holberg has a testifier as well. Go ahead, Mr. Neumeister.
For the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I would like to know about the following. So there's a bill introduced tomorrow. I look at the bill and I say, that's a money bill here. So can I go to the Department of OMB or whatever it's called now? What is it?
MMB.
MMB and say, hey, for bill number 673, I'm interested for that, either for the updated version of the fiscal note or the unofficial fiscal note. Where's the trigger for when that information becomes public?
Representative Holbrook?
Madam Chair, as you'll see on lines 7 and 8 of the A1 amendment, once a bill is introduced, it becomes public.
Okay. I just want to make it clear. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Folks, any more discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, all those in favor of adopting the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. To the bill itself, then. Do you have any? Does your testifier want to testify?
She's just here for backup. We're trying to get her home, so
okay.
There's no questions. We'll send her on her way.
All right. Very good then.
Because I'm sure she's making the big bucks tonight.
Madam Chair, yes. My name is Michelle Weber, and I'm with Minnesota Management and Budget. And we asked Representative Holberg to make this amendment because our system that we use to manage fiscal notes is very old, and it would be technically very difficult to manage all of the unofficial fiscal notes that do currently get managed through that system to make them private. And so this would allow for a limited subset that the author indicates they want to be private for us to use. We would manage those outside of the technical system we currently have.
Very fine. Questions for the testifier? Seeing none, Representative Holberg renews her motion that House File 2668 be recommended to pass and move on to the Civil Law Committee. All those in favor?
As amended.
As amended. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. 2668 moves on to Civil Law. Thank you so much. 2701 is our next bill, and this is also Representative Holberg.
And, Madam Chair, I could sit and take testimony and get a whole bunch of people agitated and sit here for a while, but I'm tired, you're tired. So we're going to start out by deleting a whole bunch of this bill.
Okay. All right,
to begin
go ahead.
With, and hopefully like half the room clears out. So, I'd like to move to consideration of House File 2701 by the subcommittee, and then move an oral amendment to delete Section 1, Section 2, and Section 3, and then an oral amendment on page 4, line 33, after the word are, insert the word not. And the effect of the introduction of the word not on line, page 4, line 33, is it would require less work by the commissioner, and that the presumption would that all opinions apply to other situations unless the commissioner gives a reason why that would not be the case.
Okay.
And I think that's it for the oral amendment.
Okay. An oral amendment has been made. All those in favor of oral amendment to House File 2701, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Holberg.
Then I also have the A1 and the A3 amendments.
Representative Holberg, I think I have an A2 as well.
There's
here.
Still all these people here, Madam Chair.
Not moving the A2.
A bunch of them would leave.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Representative Holberg.
All right. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment, members? We're good. All those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Holberg.
And then we have... one more amendment that amends the subcontractor language on page 5, and I don't think this is going to satisfy all the concerns that I heard, but hopefully gets us a little closer, and that's page the A3 amendment.
All right. The A3 amendment has been moved. Discussion from members. Seeing none. All those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Holberg, discussion more broadly on your bill?
I guess at this point I would, I think if we just want to take testimony on what's left, it probably is a better use of the committee's time.
Okay. Who might you have for testimony? Anyone?
I'm guessing the people that would like to testify at this point will be against what's left in the bill.
Mr. Neumeister is making his way forward.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is a very positive bill. A question I do have is about, I don't know what the A3 amendment does because I haven't got a copy, but the A1, where it does put upon request of the agency. So I'm a citizen. I think there. I would like to see where the subcontracts are, who's getting of a $20 million thing to a major contractor, public money. And I want to see the subcontract. I go to the municipality. I go to the agency. Can I have a copy of it? Oh, I'm sorry, we don't collect those. So by that, by me asking that question, and I, the public, want to see it, does this then say, hey, the agency then has to ask that contractor for that subcontract so I, the public, can see what the business is doing with the public money. So that's the issue. So what may happen is the citizen wants to look at that, the public wants to look at that, but they're getting into a fight with this kind of language now because the agency or the municipality may not have it. So that's
the concern that I see with the adoption of the amendment. I think it's about time that we do something on this to bring more sunshine. So that's my point is that to clarify what would happen when the public asks for that data. The agency doesn't have it. Does this require then the municipality to ask for it?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Questions for the testifier? Anyone else wishing to testify? Mr. Gibberly? Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, I was going to testify for COGI on sections 1, 2, and 3. With their deletion, we just love this bill.
Very good. All right.
I was going to start my remarks by saying it was really hard to come up here and disagree with Representative Holberg, but I don't have to say that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Representative Simon.
Thank you. I'm not sure if we're on this point right now, but I wanted to talk about the about Section 7 and just how it's been amended. So on page 6, so as I understand it, the only amendment now to this is that you've added on line 6.22 after the A, it now says, upon request of the municipality, a municipal contract must require, et cetera, et cetera. Is that right? That's the only change.
That's correct.
Okay, so, Madam Chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. So, as I understand it, this, got it, okay. So this, what happens to those contracts? Are they then public data? In other words, let's say the municipality requests them. Request that the contractor submit the subcontracts, copy of any subcontracts. Are those then public?
Representative Holberg.
Madam Chair and Representative Sinem, to the degree that there's not data in there classified, you know, business proprietary, you know, those kinds of components would still hold, but the presumption was that it would be public unless sub-data sets within the contract were given another classification under Chapter 13.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Holberg, and I'm sure you've been talked to by others on this issue, and I'm sure we'll hear from some, but this is a tough one for some of us who really want transparency and openness, but on the other hand, realize that in the marketplace there are things that need to remain secret. You know, Coca-Cola is not going to release its formula, and there's a such thing as a trade secret, and it's not even necessarily a formula or a patent or anything. It could be a negotiating strategy. So if you have subcontractors, there may be strategic reasons why central to their business model that they might put out different bids to different contractors. And I don't know how we navigate the two. You and I both, I know, want pretty maximum transparency. On the other hand, I feel for the subs out there who feel this could sort of put a crimp in their business strategy. So I assume we're going to hear testimony on that. But
Representative Holberg?
Madam Chair, I'm sure we will as well. I'm assuming we're going to hear some tonight. Between now and Wednesday, we might be able to work out some, you know, additional comfort language. But I don't think it hurts to have the discussion. And it may be in the end we still can't find a solution. But it's something that I think we still need to have the discussion.
I would concur. Mr. Gimberling, go ahead.
Madam Chair, responding to Representative Simon, who's working at the moment, the most likely claim that subcontracts would not be public will be a claim that they contain trade secrets. So far, at least, the district courts in Minnesota have been friendly to trade secret claims under the Data Practices Act. I don't know of appellate court decisions. What I'm saying, Representative Simon, is the most likely claim is trade secret under the Data Practices Act. Government agencies have a range of ways they respond. I don't know if the state still does this, but for a long time, the AG would basically agree with companies who were asked to provide information that the companies thought were trade secret, that they would provide the trade secret on the condition that if anybody ever asked it, the company would be alerted and have a chance to litigate against its release to the public. So that's my best guess is that's what will happen in this kind of situation. So if the subcontract actually contains something that you can make an argument is a trade secret. So I hope that helps.
Right. Any other questions for Mr. Gimmerling while he's at the table? Okay, very good, thank you. Mr. Neumeister, are you going to comment on this one, or you're good? Okay. Anyone else wishing to testify regarding House File 2701? All righty. All right, members. We will. Did we pass? Did we do the amendment? We didn't. Okay. All right. All right. Representative Holberg, would you like to renew your motion then?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 2701, as amended, be recommended to pass and approve the full Committee of Civil Law.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right. 2701 is passed on to Civil Law. Representative Abler, are you in the room? There you are.
Maybe Representative Meyer, I don't know if he's...
We're working on an amendment. Mr. Gearing is preparing an amendment for the Myra bill, so we'll go ahead with the Abler bill.
I'm not sure we have an amendment that people
can. Members in the audience, if you aren't aware, we did have a discussion earlier in the day in Civil Law, full Civil Law Committee, about Representative Abler's bill, and so we asked him to come this evening, and here he is.
Go Madam Chair, I can't count in the world the people who do not have the privilege to come to this committee this evening. If you count them up, like, what is it, 5 billion people? None of them are here but us, and so I feel very privileged. So thank you for having us back. It's we did our homework. There's an amendment that's being passed out addressing the concerns about the data, and maybe Mr. Kerber could describe that. Do you have to move bills and amendments, or is this kind of a casual thing, or how does that in this subcommittee?
Okay, Representative Abler, I've been informed that we don't actually have the bill in front of us. It's still in Civil Law, so we're going to hold the amendment to then. We can discuss the whole thing here, though.
The amendment is actually written to the 810 amendment.
So this is written to the 810 amendment, so just to help members enter. But Mr. Kerber can describe that. And so there was a concern in the committee today, which the workshop's been working, and I think they've got a good resolution. So.
All right, is it Gerber?
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry Kerber with a K from the Department of Human Services.
Go ahead.
Okay, Madam Chair. There were a lot of good questions earlier this afternoon regarding this bill. And so what we've done is we've tried to make some clarifications to address most of those. And so the first one in this oral amendment on page 1 of line 16 is to that 810 amendment that was distributed, and I think it was adopted. What we're trying to do here is to narrow the information that does get transferred to the Department of Human Services. What's going on here is that the Department of Human Services in this bill would be receiving some information from the Department of Public Safety, from the driver's license area of their database. And two types of data were being sought here. The first is information where an individual is, their driver's license is discontinued, really as a result, the first time around as a result of a facial recognition project that's underway. But the goal is really more, it's broader than that. So if somebody is being disqualified from their license because the Department of Public Safety's internal quality assurance activities, whatever they might be, determine that somebody was represented in more than one driver's license or more than one ID, and they're taking action because of that to terminate one of the licenses, that they would notify the Department of Human Services. And so the suggestion was is that we narrow that that those data fields a bit that come to the Department of Human Services. It was very broadly written before that any termination of a license under 171.14 would come. And so there was a suggestion by one of the committee members that this be narrowed to paragraph A clauses 1, 2, or 3. And those are basically where somebody provided inaccurate information at the time that they were applying for a license, or there was something determined to be fraudulent regarding the information they provided. So that should address that concern. The second part is kind of getting more at, and I'll find this amendment here, the and this is line 16, still on page 1. No, yes. When we get this information from the Department of Public Safety, we would be getting this information on a monthly basis about the people who have had a driver's license canceled. And so the question was, are we on a monthly basis going to get information about everybody who's ever had their driver's license canceled? And so this is really kind of technical amendment to say, well, it's only those that have been canceled since the last time we got information.
Madam Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
I'm not sure your language says that, though. Because it says subsequent reports should only include cancellations that occurred after the end date of the cancellations represented in the first data report. So you only have one first data report, so every month you're going to be 30 days, 60 days, 90, reports are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Maybe previous data?
Previous, I think that would do
Mr. Kerber or Representative Ablers, is something we can...
Yeah, Madam
a few
Chair.
Few words we can put in there?
On the end of the third line of that piece, if you strike first and add insert previous... Or delete first and insert previous. Does that work, Representative Holbrook?
I think it's better than what you have.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, I think that's better.
Thank you. Good catch.
Yeah, we'll note that for the full committee then, folks.
We're talking about the words first.
Mr. Kerber, were you still covering this, the changes that were made, is that right?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The next amendment here is on page 2, line 8, of that A10 amendment again. And this was to insert, let's see, this is to make it clear that this is dealing with the people whose legal presence has changed, and if the legal presence has changed on the driver's license in the driver's license database, that those people would be reported to us. But it's only after they have also had the driver's license discontinued, and so they've had the appeal process has run its course, and then we get that information. And so it wasn't entirely clear here on line 8 that that and wasn't sufficiently doing the job, that it was those people whose status has changed and they've lost their license. And so that's what this is trying to do here. So as a result of the legal status changing, they have lost their license. So we get that information. And then there were a few others here that are really pretty technical in nature that were requested by the Department of Public Safety on page 2, line 7, inserting the word date after the status because it's not a change in the status so much as that it's a trigger, it's a change in the status of date in the database. So it's quite technical. And then on line 8, the next line, again, another little amendment in there that would say that they were canceled. It was sort of like it was accordingly. Their driver's license expired, or the legal presence status date expired, and then as a result, the driver's license or identification card has been accordingly canceled. So there's it's all these little words to remove any ambiguity about what's happening here. I think that does it. Then the last amendment on here on page 45 is sort of a little different issue. 45, and that's to the bill, to the first engrossment. And that's trying to deal with an issue that was brought to my attention by Mr. Neumeister earlier this evening. And it's trying to get at what we're actually doing here with drug conviction information. Right now, the system is depending on when we determine eligibility. We really rely, for the most part, on the self-report of a felony drug conviction, and essentially that's accepted. However, it's not always accurate, and so what this would do is allow us to get information from the court information system, from MNSIS, on a regular basis, and then just verify whether or not people do in fact have a felony drug conviction under 152. We're not interested in all felony drug convictions, but only those going back to 97, which is a long time, but that's really that coincides with the criteria in the eligibility language, that if somebody has a felony drug conviction under 152 after 1997, then it kicks into that the person is required to have drug testing on a random basis. If they fail a couple of drug tests, then they're essentially disqualified from the program. But there's a lot of due process in there. But so it's just kind of piggybacking on that process.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerber, when somebody applies for one of your programs, do they sign off or are they informed that as a condition of being a part of this program that the department will have access to their driver's license records, court records? I haven't ever been on one of your programs, so I don't know this. I don't recall having done my driver's license, giving permission at the License Bureau for DBS to share my stuff with Health or Human Services. So how does the average Joe know that if they're in these programs that there's going to be more scrutiny on these records?
Mr. Kerber.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, I think there's two answers to that question. One is from the Department of Human Services perspective and one is from the Department of Public Safety. Both agencies are required to comply with the Tennyson warning requirement, the privacy notice under Chapter 13. And so when we add elements like this, or when you add elements like this to our laws and it requires a change in what is that privacy notice that's given up front, we have to make the privacy notice. And so it doesn't often or doesn't frequently get, we don't get reminded of that in the bill because it's one of our requirements. And so if this were to pass, what we would do is go back and look at that notice that's given to people who are applying for a DHS administered program. Separate from that, we had that conversation with the Department of Public Safety. And so I might let my colleague here, Pat McCormick, address that, because they also give a privacy notice when people are applying for a driver's license.
And if I might, to this point, so if your privacy notice that you're currently using is not broad enough, so then will this only apply to new applicants? Do you make people re-up every month? I mean, if I'm a bad actor and I know I have four different driver's licenses and you haven't caught me for 4 years, how does that work under this bill? Can you just start doing it or does everybody have to re-up?
Mr. Kerber.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, that's a really good question. I think practically, this is going to be addressed on a kind of an annual basis where people get they get recertified every year. And so at that recertification time, we would be updating the privacy notice that's given. Now, and we could, I think at that time, we'll make sure that the privacy notice is correct then if we're going to make an administrative decision. Separate from that, I think there might be some other avenues being pursued separate from the Department of Human Services on some of these. In particular, if we're getting this information because the Department of Public Safety has realized that somebody does have more than one driver's license in different names, if it's the same individual, they may be pursuing their own avenue with that. And so it might be less of an issue by the time it gets to Human Services. But I think, you know, we'll have to figure that out. But certainly we have to respect the Data Practices Act requirement and the notice. And so if our notice didn't give, our initial notice wasn't sufficient, we'd be giving them a notice at that time.
Well, and Madam Chair, I'd hope that the department work rapidly to figure it out now.
Okay.
I mean, you should know that.
Well,
I mean, if we're going to pass into law a new scheme and you need more authority or, I mean, certainly under the, if you're going to have a criminal investigation, the cops, you know, have broad latitude and are going to have access to, you know, all of this stuff, probably. But if you have a new inspector general department or whatever, because it's a new department, to what degree they have the authority to do investigation, get information outside of a, if you haven't done a proper Tennyson, et cetera, you may run up against your own problems and not having the authority to do what you want to do.
Mr. Kerber.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, those are really very valid points. This wasn't a department initiative, and so we're kind of reacting to it, too, although we think it's a good idea.
Right.
There's some cost with it that may be in conflict with the governor's budget and all that. But the concepts here are good ones that we are committed to, the whole program integrity activities. We like program integrity, as Representative Abert would say. And so,
Madam Chair, Mr. Kerber, I like data integrity.
So there are some things that there are many tentacles to this, of course, that haven't necessarily been well thought through yet. But we do certainly have a staff that's attentive to the data practices concerns, and because I haven't thought of them yet, it doesn't mean that we will ignore them as we go forward.
All right, thank you.
Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, I think just to help out with this, I believe when the people sign their forms for assistance, they swear that everything on the form is correct and accurate. And there's some penalty for being inaccurate. And so the people that we're finding here on these driver's licenses are pretty much liars. You know, I mean, they've misrepresented something, at least at the end when they're found to have had four and it's the same person and they're collecting programs on three, they have committed fraud. So it's a very select group. It's not the people that haven't. So they promised they were telling the truth, and in fact they weren't telling the truth. And the drug part, those are public records. It's just a matter of connecting. And it's self-reported. So if they failed to report, they've already violated the program by not reporting. So I think it's a select group of people who have failed to do what they said they were doing correctly. So, and I share the concerns to not bring people unnecessarily into the net, but. It's a select group of people.
And Madam Chair, my concern is not bringing people into the net. My concern is that you march down this road and do all of this stuff, you know, and identify people and hope so we didn't have the authority to access this information that drove the investigation or the. I just want to make sure that everything's clear sailing, that the. You have the authority to do what you need to do to make this program a success.
Ms. McCormick, were you here to testify and give your some information from the Department of Public Safety's perspective? Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. I just understood that there were questions that came up this afternoon, and I was testifying in the Transportation Committee, and so I was asked to attend to respond to some questions that may have come up that you didn't get answers from that were pertinent to Driver and Vehicle Services and our facial recognition project, and also the process that we use in terms of notification of drivers in terms of a potential cancellation of their license.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. McCormick, do you see any problems with you having the authority to provide the information in here without a Tennyson warning to the individuals? Or is there the 14 or 17 reasons, is that enough latitude? Or
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, we certainly will have a Tennyson warning on our application. It's always on the yellow sheet. We have every agency that we provide data to. We do provide Department of Human Services with data related to driver's license data for being able for their compliance with the Federal Welfare Reform Act and child support enforcement, and so we are providing that information to a different division. Certainly we would add this to the Tennyson warning. At the same time, the department does have authority to be able to investigate people that may not be entitled to issuance, and that's basically what we're talking about. And what we, when we initially started the facial recognition project, it was a grant through the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to ensure that commercial drivers had one license, one record. And we provide a great deal of notice in terms of that process. We send a letter out to each individual. We give them 30 days to comply with bringing in additional documents, to come in for an interview. And after that, we send out a potential notice of cancellation and give them another 7 days. We still set up appointments even after that. We can cancel a license and they could come back in and provide us with the documents that they need. So I think we do provide that notice. And in terms of the legal presence, we notify people 60 days before their legal presence date expires and allow them to come in with even a letter from either their immigration attorney or with a letter from the Department of Homeland Security saying that it's being reviewed or it's in the process of being extended. And we work with individuals, and then we send another letter out another 7 days before we cancel their license, and we allow them to come in and provide documents. We oftentimes may cancel, and within a week we've uncanceled because they have provided us with the documents. So we try very hard to provide notice to our license holders. And out of the 11 million images that we have reviewed, we'd say that 0.5% are considered potential fraud. So far, we've canceled out of those review of 11 million images, 7,000 licenses, and we still are going now for a second review with another 19,000 individuals. So we take it very seriously. We know how important identification and driver's license privileges are, and so we don't lightly cancel a license. And this would only be after all those steps take place that we would send the data to the department under this legislation for this purpose. And it would also be that we would work out the details in terms of just sending data for that particular month of the cancellations. And it would only be, it would not involve other driver compliance issues. It would only be involving the particular clauses in the statute that were mentioned earlier. So,
thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, what kind of a hearing is that? I mean, is it just come in and you talk to someone in the office? And if so, is there a record made of that? And what are my rights to appeal that decision?
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, The initial administrative review is done by a driver evaluator. There's always a hearing record, a report that's written up. And after those reports, and you are also entitled to judicial review, and that notification goes out to individuals when we send them the potential cancellation letter, in which they have another 7 days. We also send them that information in a letter form from our driver services program director, asking them to call and within 30 days to set up a meeting so that we can discuss and they can provide additional documentation that they are who they say they are.
Okay, Madam Chair. So, Ms. McCormick, you said that there is a record made and then a report is written up. Is this a recorded record? I'm assuming you don't pay a court reporter to sit there and take down what happens there. Is this just the hearing officer writing down what they think transpired in the meeting?
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, yes, it's a written report that is in our files.
Okay.
Representative Lesh?
So, yes, Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. McCormick. So when you say you're entitled to judicial review, is that an expedited review? How is the judicial review provided for in your under your regulations?
Ms. McCormick.
The judicial Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, that would be at the court level. So we just provide information for them to be able to take a petition and file it in the county district court. And we provide that information in just a written summary of it, and then if people need more information, they can call us, and we will provide additional input.
Okay.
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, so I'm not saying that this initiative should be different, but most people I know, I don't know what it costs to file civil action now. What is it, Representative Simon, $250?
No,
is it? It's $350. Okay, so and I don't know if I go in and file a federal version would be a writ of mandamus, I think, or something. I don't know what the state version is, but saying that compelling a government official to do a certain act that they're required to do by law. I want to ask you to answer that question, Ms. McCormick, because it's kind of a constitutional one. But thanks, you've answered my question.
Any other questions for any of the testifiers on the bill? Anyone in the audience wishing to testify for or against the bill?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I oppose certain aspects or parts of it that I'd like to let you all know as policymakers. Page 6. On page 6, on lines 632 to 34, you're basically saying that the existence and status of an investigation by the Commissioner of Possible Overpayments is now going to be public. I think that's an important thing to do, but what other areas can they do that along with within DHS other than just that? Because one of the things that's beginning to happen is the OIG and the new formulation and the emphasis that the administration is trying to do is trying to do more things. So the public should be able to have more access to what they're doing. The other side of this, though, is that people can be tainted. A great number of folks come under DHS from the daycare that receives public funds to another. So you ask what's the existence and status of possible overpayment in some place, and they say, well, it's pending, it's this and that. So I'm just sharing with you an aspect of reputation comes into play. Page 14. It's a little sentence, but it's a big one. It's on lines 14.6 and 14.7 and 8. Basically, it gives the commissioner authority to get information without the applicable provisions of Chapter 13, which can protect a number of possible employees or people within that, basically. And so I don't know what the impact of what that is, other than you're granting some protections that are in current law. You're now giving the commissioner authority to maybe for people not to have those protections anymore. Pages 31, 32, and 33. When you go to 32 on page 31, again, the infamous on line 12 of page 31, I want the Social Security number. Again, we have had this discussion consistently over the years, is that the privacy law basically says that you can only ask for it on a voluntary basis. And that even goes back then to page 32, lines 12 through 16. You'll even see where the commissioner recognizes that, but they're now taking out the language that the individual is not required to provide this information to the commissioner, so therefore making it mandatory. So my point is, you know, reinstate that stricken language, take out the Social Security number on lines 31 and 12. Now this one on 32 further down, lines 31, continuing on to line 33. It basically says that if you can't get access to an internet, you know, the only way that you're going to do this background study or whatever is we got to grant you a variance because it's a hardship case for you to give information on high-speed internet. To me, it's just different, and I think people, if it is done in paper, they should accept that. Now, the whole issue when you talk about the public integrity provision and also on Amendment 10. The OIG, as I indicated earlier in my testimony, is a new concept done by the administration. More accountability, more transparency, and all that. And it gets back to, I think, the essence of the question that Representative Colbert, Madam Chair, asked. Well, are you thinking about these things? So, with all these new emphasis, well, the public wants to know what you're doing, what you're not doing, and accountability and transparency. So in the big scheme of things, when they're developing the OIG, what will be public, what will not be public? Because what's going to happen is people are going to ask, well, you are done with the investigation, so what's public, what's not public? Now, in regards to the drug convictions going, I think they should be purged immediately. I don't think that a department should be keeping collection and collections of thousands of names of people who are convicted of drug offenses. Because there's a lot of situations, and particularly with Minsis.
Mr. Neumeister, if I could interrupt you just for a second. Do you have a page for that?
Yeah. That's on page 45.
Okay.
Lines section 6.
Okay,
28 through 34. And it continues on page 46. So after a period of time, you're going to have thousands and thousands of names of drug offenders in DHS, not knowing what they're going to be used or on an active purge kind of thing or whatever. That's one of the concerns I have. And if you may have remembered, in the paper a few weeks ago about Hennepin County gave a lot of information to the court system, Minsis court system, and they made some mistakes in it or whatever. Again, I just have, you know, some concerns about that. The other item, and so it's the retention schedule and destruction schedule. And Madam Chair, finally, about the information of sharing driver's license information and all that. We have heard about what has happened with driver's license information going out with law enforcement. That's why when you get your legislative audit survey, I hope you support that as part of the legislative auditor, which is Representative Holberg's, that the legislative auditor take a look at that issue. But the issue is here, there are no audit type things be dealt with how that information is going over and is it being used appropriately. Again, that's going to be thousands and thousands as time goes on. No purge or retention schedule or discussion on that once they've made their match. Okay.
Questions for the testifier? Anyone else wishing? Oh, Representative Holberg.
Well, Madam Chair, is this bill, are you going to try and move this out of committee at 8 o'clock tonight, or are we going to be able to kind of work on this between now and Wednesday?
We'll be working on this between now and Wednesday. This was more just informational.
Okay. Because, I do have concerns about the Social Security stuff, the exemption of the commissioner from Chapter 13, and I'm not understanding that. I know that the full committee is supposed to reconvene at 8.
Right.
So I think we've kind of run out of time here, but I think there are some things that I'd at least like to hear more from the department as far as the justification. Those are pretty big policy changes that we've really resisted in the past, these exemptions and requiring Social Security numbers and So
okay.
I have Madam a whole Chair. Lot more time for that on Wednesday.
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, the Social Security thing is probably not necessary, so I think part of the amendment that we'll bring will be to delete Section 18.
Okay.
And to the other part, the question about how to handle all this data. If you want to go back to 97 with data, either you get it all over and over again every month, the same, a bigger and bigger dump, or you keep what you have and add to it. But even so, every month, at least for however long it takes to match up, the department will possess that data until the match process is done. And so it's a practical question, but I think it's the same amount of data in the department's hands at least each month for a shorter amount of time, or they keep it. So it's the same difference, I think. So if you have an idea, if that's the price you pay for wanting that information to judge against people being truthful about their disclosure about drug about felony drug offenses.
Sure. Representative Holbrook?
Madam Chair, I don't know, Representative Abler, if it's a lifetime prohibition or a number of years if you're convicted of a drug felony. But if it's for a period of time, then you could dump anything older than that period of time or whatever.
It's I'm looking.
Mr. Kerber?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, as I mentioned earlier, a drug conviction is an automatic disqualifier. That kicks you into a program where you have drug testing. And I believe that after you're disqualified, the first time you're disqualified for, I believe, a year, and then the second time you're disqualified from the program for whatever reason, it's a longer period of time, and it's on the third time that you're disqualified that it's a permanent disqualification.
What's the look back?
The look back under the regulations is going back to 97. Under the current law, the look back for a felony drug conviction.
What we're going to do then is have the author and the folks at the table and that have been at the table work to get rid of some of these kinks and address some of the issues that Representative Holbrook and others brought forward before next Wednesday. So
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for being here this
evening.
Appreciate
the committee's time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And members, we have just one thing to finish up before we go to the full Civil Law Committee.
Yeah, very good. Go do your homework. You'll get something nicely written up. Thank you.
Right. We have an amendment to 2647. And I will move that amendment. Mr. Gearing, you want to take over?
Madam Chair, so this amendment is a delete everything amendment that reflects the discussion that the committee had earlier tonight about structuring the language related to personnel data and releases of the complete terms of agreements when an employment relationship is terminated or modified. So you can find the new text of Clause 6 in that section on page 2 of the DE1 amendment. There are a couple of little updates that you may want to incorporate into the amendment. So page 2, line 1, after the word of, insert a comma, and after the word from, insert a comma, and then delete, comma, terminating, comma. So that clause 1 will read, arising out of, comma, or arrangement resulting from, comma, amending or otherwise modifying an employment relationship, including a buyout agreement as defined in section 123B.143, subdivision 2, paragraph A, or clause 2, then line 2.4 after money, insert, comma, or. So that clause would read, clause 2 involving the payment of more than $10,000 of public money, comma, or associated with terminating an employment relationship, provided that an agreement under this clause must include all the specific reasons for the agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Gearing. Discussion on the proposed amendments. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to make sure that terminology must include all the specific reasons for the agreement also applies to the single eye.
Mr. Gearing?
Madam Chair, the way it's structured, it applies to the items that are in Clause 2.
And why won't, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Mr. Gearing, why won't we want the specific reasons for the agreement under Clause 1?
Mr. Gearing?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, I was just taking the language from the bill as it was drafted originally, so I guess it's a policy choice.
All right.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it, in the interest of time, why don't we just adopt this and we get another swing at this on Wednesday?
Okay, let's move that amendment to the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment to the amendment is adopted and we're... And then let's move the DE1 amendment for approval onto the to 2647 to be passed, recommended and passed to civil, full civil law. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is passed. Passed. So let's now move the bill 2647 as amended. Recommended to pass to civil law also. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. It's passed. All right. And meeting, Representative Simon?
Oh, Madam Chair, just before we adjourn, I had a comment, if this is appropriate.
Yes,
so I know that there were some lingering provisions. I don't know whether they were yours or someone else's that we laid on the table before. Weren't there some iPad provisions? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be revisiting those or... No.
I don't know. Not
really.
Okay.
We're going to discuss that.
Okay.
And figure it out. Thank you. Members, we're adjourned. Thank you.